Hello, and welcome to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Paonia residents Ed and Betsy Marston hosted an event last week to discuss Standing Rock and hear from locals who had just returned from the camps there. They shared information about how the movement was organized, how they were able to help, and some valuable lessons they learned. There was also discussion about what may happen with oil and gas development locally, how best to prepare for it, as well as how to continue supporting those at Standing Rock and other movements around the country. The Standing Rock movement began in April 2016 as a small group of Lakota people trying to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline from contaminating their water supply. It evolved over many months into something much greater than that, eventually bringing more than 25,000 people to stand with the tribe. We learned at this gathering that there are many different reasons for joining this fight, and many different conclusions were drawn from the experience. We'll begin by hearing from Nikki Carpenter, who went to Standing Rock as a medic. Here's her story.
Topher and I drove through the night on election night and landed at Standing Rock as the sun was coming up. And it was very surreal. It was nice landing there, though, because nobody talked about the election. Everybody was oblivious to it. It was kind of nice to have that period of 2 weeks where, you know, that kind of couldn't touch us. But I got there, took a quick nap, and then immediately got to work figuring out, you know, where everything was, getting myself familiar with the culture and the systems that were in place, observing, and then kind of plugged into the first aid tent and the herbal teepee at Rosebud Camp, which served about, when I was there, probably about 800 people. And I spent most of my time there sorting through donations. There were so many donations that people had sent up, and everybody could just feel the love coming in from across the country. And it was kind of comical because, you know, you end up with like 800 tubes of toothpaste. And you're like, how many tubes of toothpaste do we need? But we just kind of powered through it. I built some shelves. We had this carport. We were able to store everything and organize everything and inventory everything and make it easy to access. And they had done a fabulous job before I had even gotten there, making this cute little area where they could serve people and keep people healthy. And it was like this little clinical area, and people had donated everything you need to have a medic facility come up out of the ground and grow out of nothing. It was amazing. There were doctors and nurses and herbalists and chiropractors and any healing modality you could think of, they came to help. And the amount of human resources that were there was just awe-inspiring. I think what I came away with, what was most powerful to me that I learned, was how deep this runs with the Native Americans. Like, they're not just fighting against an oil and gas pipeline, which is what it seems like on the surface, but they've got all bundled up inside these generations of oppression and accepting the brunt of progress and imperialism, and that's just kind of all wound up inside, and this is a place for them to release all that frustration. And I was so humbled by the way that they kept their composure for the most part. They acted every day as they were, as if they were in prayer. They were in prayer 24/7. Like, I woke up to drums and song, and I went to bed to drums and song. And it's just, I don't know if anybody's ever read the book, The Fifth Sacred Thing. But when I was there, somebody recommended to me that I read it, and it's just that loving resistance. Like, they didn't wish any harm on the pipeline company workers. They didn't wish any harm on the police. They were just resisting in the only way they could with the resources they could, which was their own bodies taking up space. And it was really moving. That's all I got.
Vicki, you talked to me about the sort of the unconscious racism you saw.
Oh, there was a little bit of that, and I'm sure others who went there had their frustrations about it. It was just a lack of cultural sensitivity because we're not exposed to other cultures. We expect everybody to assimilate into our white culture or our Anglo culture, you know, the Western way. And when we see other cultures, we're just not sensitive to it. I can't remember exactly what we talked about in that conversation or how I put it, but I mean, to see a young white girl just walk up to an elder and grab their hair without asking permission, I mean, it's kind of just unsettling to me that there's this lack of awareness about sensitivity towards what other people hold as sacred.
And now Gerald Espinoza, who works at Solar Energy International, tells his story about bringing solar equipment and lights to the camps at Standing Rock.
So Sarah and I loaded up a truck, brought up a bunch of food and clothes, and built a 12-volt solar system there. In addition to that, we passed out a bunch of LED solar-powered lights from Nocaro. So people in this room helped fundraise for that, so I want to thank you guys. And I was blown away by the conversations we had when we were passing out those lights to people, because it was getting dark at 4 o'clock, and it would stay dark till 9 o'clock. And so those lights were really critical for people to continue to be active, continue to be doing the tasks they need to do, and continue to stay warm and safe. And in the conversations that we had in passing those lights out, it was remarkable how articulate the Native population was about our need to transition to clean energy. And I only wish that the general American public was as aware of how pressing that need is. And so that was a lot of what we did, kind of just passing out our donations, really observing. Every morning started in prayer, as Nikki had said. And so one morning we actually kind of went to the tributary of the Cannonball River and the Missouri River. And when the police actually saw that the group was moving further towards the river, that's when the helicopters got mobilized again and were circling right over us when we were going to the prayer circle. And that morning, they did the tobacco leaf offering, and one of the elders who led us in prayer broke into tears, and it was incredibly painful to hear her sadness and her hurt. And sitting with my own anger right across the riverbanks, you see all the cops mobilizing in riot gear and shields. You couldn't even see their faces. And when they kind of realized that we are simply in prayer, eventually some of those police actually disengaged. And it was at that point when the elder that led us in prayer, when she went to make the salt and tobacco leaf offering, actually walked into the river. And it was freezing cold. And she walked waist deep in the river, muddy river, came out, and we all came around her and put coats around her and kept her warm and blocked her from the wind, and we all held each other. And so, at least in coming away from that and coming back from that, I think the election really hit me, but also just what was happening in the tribe was really hitting me. And so sitting with all that, I know we're going to talk about kind of what are the next steps, but there is the Lakota Solar Enterprise over there and the Pine Ridge Reservation, as well as the Red Cloud Solar Institute. SEI has been involved in outreach capacities with them before, but I'm really curious in terms of what we can do to sustain programs like that. The Native populations are incredibly aware, as I said, about our need to transition away from fossil fuel industry and also the inequities that those industries perpetuate onto Native populations and minorities specifically. When we actually left the reservation, we're driving to Bismarck, which was finally opened after a police barricade. We saw a huge, huge wind farm. And the North Plains are some of the windiest spots in the country, only rivaled by the coast off of New England and Cape Cod. So these solutions are there, and the technology is there, and the economics are there. But how do you kind of share these resources with a greater people? Because this decentralized power is democratic power, and that's what scares the crap out of people like DAPL and the government that's inclusion with them and the police. So I'm still trying to sit with how do I kind of resolve some of that anger that I felt, especially looking at the police across the river, knowing full well that I was in place of prayer.
You're listening to firsthand accounts of North Fork residents who went to Standing Rock. They gathered at a private home in Paonia last week to share their experiences. More than 15 people from Paonia had gone to the camps in South Dakota to support the water protectors. Here, Chris Garr talks about his trip to the area.
First of all, obviously, as those that are in this room that haven't gone are picking up, a lot of people from Paonia have gone, significantly disproportionate to the population of our town, which in the case is a pretty awesome place to live. I think it's no problem if we have to do something similar in our local area for our local cause, which I think is probably very likely. Yeah, so the Army Corps of Engineers, the Omaha district is run by Colonel Henderson, and he is the one who has made the determination on whether or not to approve the permit to go under the river. He's also the same colonel that's in charge of all Army Corps permitting in Colorado for all of our water stuff. And I've been working on the Front Range on against transbasin diversions for 5 years, and he has never sent us anything but a form email response. Mm-hmm. So for this to actually change his mind is pretty monumental from an Army Corps perspective, and maybe it's the beginning of something new. There's 7 different projects that are on his table right now that he could permit. Would take a significant amount of water out of the upper Colorado. If any of those got canned, that would be amazing and a major turn of events.
I think that calls for a thank you letter. his DAPL decision and ask him to keep up the trend.
Yeah. So, yeah, as far as being there, we weathered the storm. All of us just brought tools and equipment and survived off donations that provided for all that. Literally just warmed up in the morning, ate breakfast, stepped outside, and people were in need because it was chaos. So it was everything from helping people get vehicles started to getting them out to some chick had lost her medicine. Her antipsychotics were in the trunk of her car, which was locked, and the keys were gone. So that was interesting. But just chaos, basically, and helping out as much as we could in lots of different ways. And it was extremely cold, and we set up a Army tent that could sleep 50 and insulated it, and but it was basically just like triage at that point. And by the last couple days, Curly was telling people, you know, go home. So I don't think there's much point in going up there. I think there's probably point in being ready to go up there if the reverses, but right now.
Desdemona Dallas went to Standing Rock as a journalist.
So I went to Standing Rock as media doing photography up there. So I had a very different perspective of camp and the fact that I wasn't as involved in helping and volunteering and was kind of on the outside looking in a lot of ways. But it also gave me a lot of chance to talk to a lot of people there, and I think there's obviously a lot of environmental implications that are part of the fight that people are there in resistance to, but the thing that I took away the most was the lack of education and knowledge that I and many others have on the indigenous population of the U.S. and the kind of systemic racism that exists in our culture, and being surrounded in a community where you're forced uncomfortably to break that down, and looking at that on a moment-to-moment basis and learning and allowing yourself to kind of develop a new perspective of an entire culture that many of us have not given the proper time to actually understand. So yeah, for me, that was like the most important part of the fight, is to recognize that there's an entire population of people that was here first, that we, that whose voices haven't been heard for a long time, and to stop the judgments and recognize that those judgments are there because of how we've been educated and what we've been taught about that society and culture. So yeah, I don't know, like, educate yourself about the peoples who used to live here, and the issues around the U.S. or in around Native and Indigenous culture, and recognize that that needs to change, and the respect for that culture needs to change.
Jack Farrell joined the water protectors in South Dakota right before the announcement from the Army Corps of Engineers that they were not going to grant the easement for the pipeline.
I had the extreme pleasure and honor of being there for a week up until about 3 days ago. It was an extremely powerful experience for sure. And I feel like what happened within me and what happened in that physical geography and in the whole scale, someone said it's the Valley Forge of our time, or our host did, Ed. And I've been wanting to be an activist my whole life, and I feel really invigorated by this. I'm not saying that I haven't at all or that I'm going to all of a sudden a whole ton, but feel extremely moved. I spent my week mostly all in Rosebud. Right when I showed up, I went to the Sacred Fire right at the top of Flag Road, as they call it. The road comes in from the south that's not blocked off. When I first drove in, it was from Bismarck, and we had to turn around because we accidentally went towards the roadblocks and got to chat with the cops and get really friendly, nice, clear directions about how to go around and get to our camp. And there was an elder, the Sacred Fire at the Ocheti is the much, much bigger camp, and then you have across the river on the res, you have Rosebud and Sacred Stone. And they have these beautiful names that are not colonialized. Never have I ever dreamed in a concrete way of such a unifying event. This is hopefully the instigation to make the radical change that's going to make all the healing of the world that I keep dreaming about. And everybody knows we have to take it home. I'm going to try to just speak about my experiences, though, instead of macroscopic perspective, I guess. Someone asked me, and I've only been asked about one question since I've been here, where I was sleeping. And my first night was, I showed up, JC gave me an awesome job putting in some stovepipe in a teepee that was getting a real stove in it. And then I said a prayer over a teepee that this gal had been there for a long time, was just erecting her teepee. And then I went over, and JC was like, I was like, where am I going to sleep tonight? And JC mentioned to me that there was going to be a room in the North Fork Water Lovers teepee starting the next night. So I was going to sleep under the stars. And this amazing 24-year-old who's a supernatural builder, probably could be my teacher for a long time, had put up 6 teepee poles with tarps and blankets. He made a really nice 2-person. He had one, and he offered to me, as I was about to go to bed the first night, he's like, are you all right? I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I mean, if you have some place warm, because he was right next to me, and he was checking in on me, and it was amazingly synchronistic. I had so much... I helped out a lot at Rosebud from then on, and it's like people have been already saying that you got to work, and that's what you did, and it was full days. Sometimes the weather beat you down, but there was so much spiritedness and good feelings in that camp. I was not exposed to anything that was good feelings, I would say, throughout the entire time. I got to witness the Sacred Fire starting a little bit before, like half an hour maybe, they announced that the Army Corps had denied the permit to go under the water. And so there was celebrating and song with a mob of over 1,000 people for quite a while. So it was inspiring.
Those who went to Standing Rock were asked to take some training if they planned to be part of the community or any direct action. Jack explains what he learned at the orientation.
From the orientation, I wrote down that the Lakota tribe has 7 values, and they used them as a teaching tool for the folks there to understand how to decolonize themselves most effectively, to be there without colonizing what was there. Number one was fortitude. They described it as inner strength. Two is respect. Listen and pay attention and follow directions were aspects of how to respect there. Compassion is three. With selves as we learn, with ourselves as we learn, the fact that we make mistakes and with others. Number four is honesty, stereotypes, placing goodwill with biases. Five is generosity, without colonization, not just material generosity. Number six is bravery, not macho or sacrificial, can be stepping back or having a hard conversation. And seven was wisdom. And then they had four take-home points for anybody who was there, whether they, it was their reservation or they were a visitor. And one was, this is indigenous-centered. Two is, this, build a legacy. Three is, be of use. And four is, take it home. I thought that was pretty good.
I'm Topher. I was up at Standing Rock for almost 5 weeks. My experience there, like everybody else's, is very different depending on what job you have. I was a security guard for a Sichangu camp, which in Washishi is pronounced Rosebud. I just asked Curly where I could fill in, and that's where he pointed me, because I'd been in there in December with Cristalbo and JC. So the people, they knew us, and they liked us, and they trusted us. And it was a duty that I took wholeheartedly and took seriously, and I saw a lot of things that I can't unsee. The compassion and the strength and the beauty of the Lakota people is unmatched on this earth. I've been all over the Western United States, and I've never seen such a strong people in my life. So just being among them and being, you know, being accepted, there's a lot of lines that get drawn, but they're not getting drawn the lines of, like, color anymore, like your skin color or your eye color, because I looked into thousands of eyeballs. And the people that will give you the hardest time are white people between the ages of 21 and 31. That's sad to say. They are the most disrespectful people up there. And for me, it, there's a lot of egos flying around up there. And this, there's just no place for it. And the native, the locals, as I call them, were very gracious about reminding people in a gentle yet strong way that they were overstepping their bounds. We had a, you know... And just, we had another guy that was working security up there, and he was having a problem with the guy at the, at our, we had a sacred fire on our side at Sichangu camp, and he was calling for help, calling for backup on the radio, and somebody asked him if the guy was native or not, and he said, on the radio, nope. And when we got there, the guy was full-blooded Lakota. So you have this, and those people are always the people that claim to be like 1/16th Cherokee, in my experience. So, and the common respect thing is like Nikki was talking about, how you just run into things in our society that are not acceptable. They would never walk through a group of people that were talking. They would never start talking when someone else was talking, unless it was an emergency. And they will say stuff to you like, go now, I mean it. And you just do. Being truly in service is not taking your ego with you. If you go to Standing Rock, in my opinion, is over. It's a different movement now. I would caution all of you, if you're going to support Standing Rock, to really do your research. You know, people don't know who Dave Archambault is, and they don't know who, you know, Crow Dog is. They don't know the elders. They're not listening to the elders. If I had been lied to for 400 years and they tried to build a pipeline through my Rez, I would have gone monkey crap too. But they held it together really well, really, really well. And there was no instigating of violence from our side. The beauty of that, the care and compassion that you can have for complete strangers about a cause, if that comes out of Standing Rock and goes everywhere else on Turtle Island, then we went, we're going to win. But we have to carry that around with us. We have to truly be in service. And that's why the days are so long. Because you keep asking people what you can do to help. If you ask 10 people what you can do to help, and 5 of them say, yes, I need your help, we're going to be busy. You know, we got kids here that need shoes. We got people in this town that need firewood. We got people in this town that need food. We have people in this town that need shelter. And we have the big company up here on the hill that they will frack the fork. It would. I had a friend of mine, she was in Palestine, and she said, I felt safer in Palestine than I do at Standing Rock. Because at night when there was actions, they'd scramble a radio signal. Choppers would come in, lay themselves sideways, so low over camp with 2 little tiny lights on that you could feel it. You could literally feel it in your chest. Watching it come together and then watching it kind of start to fracture was heartbreaking. But I made friends that I know if I ever see them again, I know I can count on them. And I know I can count on Standing Rockers from now on. I just do. If you've been there, then that's good enough for me.
Topher.
Yes, ma'am.
What do they need now?
What do they need now?
Yes.
They need a snowmobile.
Well, my brother might be able to help with that.
If we can all pitch together and get them a snowmobile, that'd be great. If everybody's got $20, we could probably get a snowmobile.
Paonia resident Chris Dalbo tells the story of his trip to Standing Rock.
The level of love that I felt at Standing Rock, I think because of one sort of common goal, you know, everybody was there for, well, I like to say it was for the water, but, you know, it's to help these people out for one reason or another. And what brought me up there really was Amy Goodman's thing, you know. I'd been kind of following this. I don't really follow news too much. But to see people getting attacked by dogs like that, just infuriated me. And that was the point. I was just like, you know, if I don't do, at least go up there and figure out if I can do anything, I don't think I'll be able to live with myself for the rest of my life, you know. It was one of those. So we went up there. You know, me and Toph and JC went up there for a week or whatever. And I feel really blessed to have met a lot of the people that I met there. I got to spend a lot of time, you know, talking to some old people, you know, some of the local Standing Rock folks and some Rosebud folks, and getting to know their perspective on things and learn a little bit of language, which I thought was really cool too, because a lot of those Lakotas lost their language, you know, generations ago, and they're still relearning it. So it's really interesting to, like, get in on some conversations like that. You know, these Native folks, like, talking amongst themselves, like, you know, how do you say whatever? I thought that was super cool. Also, everybody that I talked to there, you know, everybody's got the same sort of thing going on, just like we do in their backyard. You know, everybody's got a story of, you know, some mines coming in, some corporations coming in to, you know, do whatever, mess up the land, mess up the water, mess up the people. And that's where I think that's going to help this movement, whatever it is, you know, spread. I mean, it's spreading here. You know, we're here talking about it.
You're tuned into Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Nearly 30 North Fork residents gathered at the home of Ed and Betsy Marston last week for a discussion about Standing Rock. They heard from locals who'd gone to support the water protectors about their experiences there. Some people at the meeting who had not been to Standing Rock had more questions afterwards about the organization and goals of the movement. Nikki Carpenter, who spoke at the gathering about her experiences working at the Rosebud Camp, said in her observation, it seemed as if the leaders arose organically and often had differing opinions and strategies. There was a tribal council that convened daily to make decisions and solve problems, but organization was loose. Some of the core values of the movement were as follows. Indigenous rights and protection. They asked supporters to stand up in defense and support marginalized communities without colonizing their movement. Community rights. Recognizing that communities should have the autonomy to decide what kind of development occurs within and around them. The end of fossil fuels. Recognizing that the social, ecological, and local economic costs of fossil fuels are not accounted for, and that it's time to enact alternative solutions. The value of healthy air, water, and land. recognizing that mitigation is not acceptable and that prevention of contamination should be a priority. Nikki encouraged everyone in attendance to continue the conversation about Standing Rock and start planning in preparation for similar resistance in the North Fork. For information, she recommended that people visit citizensforahealthycommunity.org and join the North Fork Water Lovers page, which serves as a Facebook hub for Standing Rock and related community events and news. Thank you for listening to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot.